Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, welcome to the second hour of Up North News for this Friday, September 16th. Pat Kreitlow over here, Luke Mathers over there. It's Dad Shirt Friday, so if you've got your green and gold flannel, which I do, you can sport that proudly.
So, question from the non-dad, the casual observer of Dad Shirt Friday.
Yes.
Do all flannels count?
Yes. Oh. I think all flannels count. See, I think we were giving the impression that dad shirts are just either something with a Hawaiian theme or a bowling theme, when really we're getting into anything you would not normally wear, something you would not be caught dead in your 20s, basically 20s or 30s, or some of these where by the time you get to your 40s and you don't care if your kids are embarrassed by you or not, if it's comfortable and, you know, you can't wear it necessarily to the office, even on casual Friday, you're going to wear it because you're a dad and you just, you know, that's what you do.
See,
as you can see, look, if this were clearly defined in a fashion Bible someplace, I would read you chapter and verse, but it really does come down to it's so casual and comfortable, but you couldn't even wear it on casual Fridays in a professional office space. Although if I were in office space, not that I've seen the movie for a while, but if you were to wear a shirt like this, they would ask you, the consultant would come in and ask you that key question. What is it you say you do around here?
What would you say you do here?
Because they think, is this guy in maintenance? What's his situation?
See, that's an interesting dynamic because for my flannel collection has grown, but I never go and buy them. They've always been gifts. So I guess this is shedding some light on the flannel shirts that I do own, because I wouldn't classify them as dad shirts. But I have plenty of them now, and I've been more drawn to wearing them because they just make sense in, like, Wisconsin, because I wasn't going and wearing them all summer because it's hot, right. But they're very just sensical shirts to wear from fall through spring here in Wisconsin.
And remember, not every pattern shirt is flannel, and not every flannel shirt, you know, has different degrees of style. And keep in mind that until, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, flannel shirts were pretty much just that standard red and white, you know, checked pattern thing that, you know, Sean Duffy wore trying to convince people that, you know, he wasn't a tool of Wall Street. And now they come in all sorts of patterns, some more stylish than the other. But again, a lot of them you still couldn't wear into what you would, you know, literally call a white collar situation. So, you know, how's that for our 5-minute definition of a dad shirt?
Well, I'm learning.
Which, by the way, is not the same as dressing like a schlep. You know, if you put on just a t-shirt with the neck that is way stretched out, you put some kind of a zip hoodie over it, that's not necessarily a dad shirt just because you couldn't wear it in a professional situation. I've now reduced him to just cowering in the corner and covering up his otherwise fashionable attire for the day.
I'm just going to turn my camera off.
There goes his camera. Hey, I had lederhosen and a hat on a few minutes ago, so we can all just be part of this together. The man in the flannel, green and gold flannel shirt continued to look at news headlines ahead of Mark Jacobs' arrival. We've told you for the past few weeks about how Senator Tammy Baldwin and others, Democrat and Republican, have been working to pass federal law that guarantees marriage rights for same-sex couples. It is something right now that is not in federal law. It is legal because of a U.S. Supreme Court decision, the Obergefell decision. But that decision could be easily repealed now that the Supreme Court is controlled by right-wing justices, just as they did with abortion rights in Roe v. Wade. So there has been this push to codify this into federal law, meaning Congress would have to pass it. And given the Senate's arcane rules that require 60 votes to do anything, it means that the 50 Democrats will have to find 10 Republicans who are willing to do what all 100 of them should be doing, which is standing up for basic human decency and the rights of all adults to engage in consensual relationships, who want to marry, to be able to marry. And that won't happen now, because yesterday, Senator Tammy Baldwin and others who had been trying to get those 10 Republican votes acknowledged that they will not be able to get that done before the election. So they asked for extra time, giving every indication that there are Republicans who are willing to go along, but they want to wait until after Election Day to cast that vote, whether they are maybe lame ducks who are leaving the Senate, or other Republicans in tight races who want to wait till they get reelected. You can call that gutless if you want. I certainly don't mind. But let's also look at the practicalities of it and keep our eyes on the prize. This is not about, I mean, while it may have political ramifications prior to the election, if it keeps some people motivated and keeps them active to vote, that's fine. But the practical implication is this needs to get done. This bill needs to pass. This right needs to be enshrined in law. And if it means it has to happen a little bit after the election, it's a worthy goal worth pursuing. Mark Jacob along the way here. This is Up North News. We'll be right back. A little bit of Glenn Frey to take us into the 9 o'clock hour here on this Friday, September 16th, Up North News. We'll get into the smuggling in a moment. First time I've been advised I owe Luke Mathers an apology for singling out his T-shirt, which looked like something out of a Downy commercial. That is not the case at all. He is a handsome man who does not know how to operate his washing machine that he just bought himself, but we're keeping hope alive that, much like me and the zucchini, we can see progress toward becoming a better human being. For me, it's my diet. For him, it's his laundry. The struggle is real, folks. The struggle for men in relationships is real.
The smart appliances that are out there now have so many bells and whistles to them. I just haven't, mastered it yet.
Are you trying to tell me you can't wash your clothes unless there's an app on your iPhone that controls this?
No, I'm telling
you
that the app on the iPhone prevents me from washing my clothes because it makes the process more difficult than it needs to be. Okay, but that's okay. Nonetheless. See, it's I know that you're feeling better, Pat, because you wouldn't be picking on me if you weren't getting over that head cold of yours. So I see this as progress.
Did you really like how kind I was when I was near death these past couple of days? Is that what you're saying?
I miss it.
Mark Jacob is here now to help me not feel so alone in the old dog category. Not that old dogs can't learn new tricks, but We need to commiserate now and then. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. You calling me an old dog?
Yes.
Big fight here?
Sure. You want to fight about whether we're old or not? I'm happy to take up that fight.
I confess.
I've said many a time, I'm going to be a really good old man whenever I'm willing to accept that I've crossed that line. And since I'm not there yet, clearly it's made me grouchier than I mean to be. So Mark and I will, as we do on Fridays, talk about various things that have happened in the news over the past week. But I really wanted to start on a story that, it's not a happy story. I'm sorry. If you're looking for uplifting moments, you just got it in the tales of washers and dryers. But we need to talk about these right-wing governors in Florida and Texas who are, call it what it is, they are taking part in human trafficking by taking undocumented immigrants and basically, snatching them off the streets, practically putting them on airplanes or buses, taking them across state lines to other places and just abandoning them there. I don't know that there's a better, there are not many better definitions of human trafficking, Mark. And I know you and I both are more than a little bothered by the moral implications of this, of people trying to play politics with people who are truly in need.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just a political issue. It's not, you know, a wedge issue. It's a human decency issue, you know, and when you're not thinking about these, you know, poor, desperate people, you're not thinking about the right thing first. And so Pat, I mean, have you talked about the whole big picture here, or can I kind of explain kind of what?
No, please do. We haven't had a chance to really get into this, so I'm glad you're willing to kind of give us some perspective and background.
Okay, here's my little 101 on it. The U.S. has an immigration problem. It has a border problem. These are real problems. Many people, especially from South and Central America, are flooding up here because they want the opportunities we have. They have terrible governments down there. They have gang problems. Venezuela is a mess. And so people, desperate people who want economic opportunity are coming to the United States because they see there is economic opportunity for some people here. So there's a problem. Let's not pretend there's not a problem. And handling them is a difficult issue. Now, you keep on hearing people say we have open borders. Well, obviously we don't have open borders because 2 million people in the last year have been apprehended at these borders. So if they were open, you wouldn't have 2 million people apprehended and held in process. What to do with them? Very difficult question. Let's remember that overwhelmingly, these are asylum seekers. These are not people who aren't following a legal process. There actually is a law in this country that says that if you want to apply for asylum, we will hear your appeal and we will decide whether to let you in this country. So that's what they're doing. They're not lawbreakers. That's the thing that I think people don't really understand. Okay, so we have this difficult problem with 2 million people showing up in the last year who we don't know what to do with, and are really, the current immigration laws are not going to allow us to let them all in. So what do? We're trying to process them. We're trying to figure out what to do with them. Very difficult question. Interestingly enough, the United States has a hiring problem right now. Our jobless rate is so low under Biden that a lot of businesses are saying they can't hire people, especially for these kind of entry-level jobs, restaurant jobs, various things like that. So if the immigration laws were changed to allow more people in, that might address that problem a little bit. But all right, we have problems, many. So these Republican governors, not coincidentally, who are running for re-election this year, have started shipping, as you say, sending some of these migrants to big cities, sanctuary cities, big cities who have big immigrant populations now and have generally welcomed immigration. That's Governor Abbott in Texas, mostly sending people to New York City, Washington, D.C., Chicago, most recently. But that wasn't enough, getting enough publicity. So Ron DeSantis decided he wanted to get in on the action. He got some migrants from Texas, of all places, had some person named Perla recruit them from migrant centers and promise them, according to the migrants themselves, promise them that they would be flown to Boston where they could complete work papers. So that's what they were told. So they get on these two planes, they fly to Florida, which I think is, my suspicion is that's a toe touch so that DeSantis wasn't violating his own state's laws, which only permit him to use this money to ship these immigrants if he's shipping them from Florida.
Okay.
So he picks them up in Texas, does a little toe tap in Florida, and then sends them to Martha's Vineyard, this resort area, this place where the rich and famous like to stay. Total surprise to people in Martha's Vineyard. They just get dropped off with a map of Martha's Vineyard, and they have to walk 3 miles into town. All right, so. And interestingly enough, I think that DeSantis and others thought that this was going to really own the libs, but the people in Martha's Vineyard have welcomed them and are trying to deal with them in a humane manner. So that's happening there. Meanwhile, Greg Abbott doesn't like the fact that DeSantis is grabbing the headlines on this. So he buses some more migrants to Kamala Harris's neighborhood in Washington, D.C., because he's got to get in on the action. I don't know whether they're going to start dropping them through by parachute to the Capitol or what. They really are desperate to kind of get attention here.
They really are. And the point that they start to make, and I'm just to set this up, I'm certainly not going to be that sympathetic to their plight, is to say that they need more people in D.C. and Chicago and elsewhere to see what it's like at the border. Okay, it may be a very chaotic, busy situation there, but A, they're not helping by doing this, but B, rather than wishing people in Washington would see the situation at the border, it seems like they, Abbott and DeSantis, are the ones that need to be bussed or flown to Venezuela and some of these other places to see the situation that folks are desperate to escape. These are largely lawless places. Right. And I'm not saying that America has to have all the answers or all of the funds, but there certainly seems to be a lack of understanding of why these are asylum seekers and not just people who are, you know, looking to push a broom for $5. They are desperate to get out of places that DeSantis and Abbott need to be dropped into.
Right. I mean, and the thing about this is that it gets me about this is that both Abbott and DeSantis, you know, really push Christian principles and all this stuff. And, you know, I always went and looked up what, you know, I'm not a big, you know, Bible quoter, but Leviticus says, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, as you were strangers in the land of Egypt. And that's what Christians, that's what real Christians believe. That is a message of charity and welcoming strangers and just doing good works. And this is not that, Pat. This is not that.
It's not. In the Washington Post, they quote Yurkin Torres, 36, who said, "I just want to start working so I can find a place to sleep. I just want the opportunity to work." He journeyed through 7 countries from Venezuela, leaving behind his wife and 2 kids, hoping to find a better life before a blonde woman approached him at that migrant aid center in San Antonio. They mentioned another person who, you know, swam across the Rio Grande, you know, with their 7-year-old daughter. And we know how many children have been, you know, lost in this, but it's because they don't want their children lost in either gang violence or through poverty or anything like that. This is a true human catastrophe, and it's not helpful to turn this into not just a partisan situation, but to turn it into something that is nothing more really, Mark, than setting up how both of these men want to run for president in 2 years and are trying to outdo each other with how cruel they can be.
Right. I mean, it's a stunt. I mean, the real answers are big answers. There is making those governments in Central and South America better, by America encouraging them to be better, and which America has a lot of economic influence there and could make a difference. So creating more opportunity for them so they can actually have, they can make a life for themselves in their home countries would be one answer to it. And just also there's just the immigration system, the way it's set up. It's if you don't have a doctorate, I mean, it's kind of tough to get in. Mm-hmm. And creating a better legal immigration system would be the answer, but Pat, those are hard things to do, rather than just spending millions of dollars to charter 2 airplanes to do a stunt and fly people, lie to people, and fly them across the country.
It's kind of like we said about Foxconn in our last hour. Instead of giving, you know, $3 billion to one company, what if you gave $10,000 grants to 10,000 businesses, which is just what, you know, Tony Evers has done to do much better good. The money that's been used on these buses and planes, if you'd have just given it to the migrants to get them started someplace, you would have made more progress. It still wouldn't have been the right answer necessarily. Right. The right answer is real immigration reform. We talked about that last week with Ruth Conniff and the book that she wrote about all the Mexican workers who come up and work on Wisconsin dairy farms. They can't get a work visa because the only agricultural work visas are temporary ones for the harvest. There isn't a year-round one because cows need to be milked year-round. We are talking to Mark Jacob about the headlines of the week. We've spent a lot of time on this. We'll get into some of the other stories still to come. But first, a reminder that our daily newsletter is available at upnorthnewswi.com by clicking newsletter in the top banner, or just find our stories on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Just search for Up North News WI. Don't forget the WI as you do that. More with Mark Jacob after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Along with Mark Jacob, former editor of the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times, as we look at events from the past week, we talked a couple of days ago about former Green Bay Packer quarterback Brett Favre and his dealings with former Mississippi Governor Phil Bryant in steering welfare funds. And we're not just talking about a buck or two. We're talking about millions into all kinds of other directions, including a facility at a university where Favre's daughter was attending college, and to have a multi-million dollar volleyball center built. Mark, you summed it up perfectly. A lot of so-called welfare queens are actually white guys in suits.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that needs not be forgotten, is that there are a lot of people who are taking money from the government that don't deserve it. And this idea that that's just, you know, people don't want to work who are poor is ridiculous. I mean, there's corporate welfare is a real thing, and just kind of white guys, you know, networking like was happening in Mississippi. And let's remember, Mississippi is the state with the highest poverty rate in the country. And to do that, and these are welfare funds. And also, Pat, and the interesting thing about that story to me was that they got text messages that showed not only did they divert this money from welfare funds for, you know, to help Brett Favre build a volleyball facility for his daughter, but they knew it was wrong. The text messages show that it's really important for us to make sure that this doesn't get out, that the source of this funding is not disclosed. You know, this is caught red-handed. It wasn't that we didn't know. There was another Brett Favre thing where he was supposed to be paid to give speeches out of welfare funds, didn't. And I think he's had to pay that back. And now the state is trying to get the interest on that money. But he said in that case that he didn't know it was welfare money. So I guess it was okay to rake off taxpayer money as long as it wasn't welfare money. This they know is welfare money. They knew it. They knew it.
Yep, they did. You write frequently about what has our media ecosystem become, you know, especially in the mainstream lanes, and that they're not as helpful as they could be in helping protect something like democracy. You noted that Bloomberg really went after President Biden for going home to vote in an election, which, again, how can we, on the one hand, tolerate the continued Republican attacks on something like absentee voting, voting by mail, but then when somebody does go to vote in person, we criticize that?
Yeah. I would put this in the category of the media desperately trying to act objective and fair, even-handed to both sides, by equating a president flying to Delaware to vote, you know, that's a bad thing. So, you know, so, which is supposed to outweigh the ex-president stealing nuclear secrets. So it's one of those things where they're desperately looking for things to criticize. And I'm not saying there's nothing to criticize about Biden. Certainly there are. Not everything he's done has been right. But come on, this is a case where, all right, so they're saying, well, he could have voted while he was there Saturday, or he could have cast a, you know, mail-in ballot. You know, but, well, he didn't. What do you want? I think it was, he has a bully pulpit, and putting it on a show of, hey, I'm going to vote, people, why don't you guys do it too, is a great message to send. And just, if that wasn't bad enough, the Bloomberg story said, and he flew back to Delaware to vote in a race when there were no high profile races. no high-profile races. That's suggesting that it's not important to vote unless there are high-profile races, that it doesn't matter who your county commissioner is, that if it's not, well, nobody's running for governor, so, you know, I mean, that it's such cynical political journalism. Just, and that's the whole, to me, the problem with political journalism these days is the cynicism and the idea that, oh, it's all the same old crap, and we're just going to talk about the about style points, and we're going to talk about tactics. We're not going to talk about issues or what's really important. It's just so disheartening.
It really is. We're over here trying to make the point that every vote matters, that every one of these races, you know, is an elected official that has some kind of degree of influence over your life. And why would you skip that? But you have these business concerns that are driving the train for some of these places like CNN, where, you know, you again took them to task for saying they want to tone down partisanship and, quote, lower the temperature. Why would a network want to lower the temperature intentionally when you're supposed to be reporting what is actually happening in the world?
Well, that's, yeah. And again, when you think about it, this really is the biggest story of our lifetime. An attempt by a major political party to overthrow democracy, to overturn a fair election and to seize power. This is an enormous story. This is a story, when you put it up against American history, it's in the top five, along with the Civil War and plenty of other things. I mean, it's a big damn deal. And so the news media, the national news media, and I'm not putting all of the media in together, but the national news media, many of them are seeing the biggest story of their lifetimes right in front of their faces, and they're trying to downplay it. And they're trying to downplay it because it's not a safe story for them. It's going to make somebody mad. It's going to make them accused of being liberals or something if they talk about the fact that the former president stole government records and tried to overthrow democracy.
It really comes back to, what is your mission? Do you have a mission to cover the news and to cover democracy, which you're allowed to do only because we guarantee a free press here?
Right.
Or are you here to make money for your shareholders?
Right.
And make your sponsors happy so that they keep paying ads. And I understand this goes back to the battles that Edward R. Murrow had to fight, you know, to do news, but he also had to do the fluffy celebrity interview show. And they wanted to do, you know, more congressional hearings, and, you know, the network brass would push back. I get that.
Right.
But at the time, you were dealing with the potential threat of what the Soviet Union posed thousands of miles away. You had a Red Scare at home that was largely concocted by a right-wing Wisconsin senator, irony of ironies. Here you have as direct a threat, but it's coming from inside the country, from fellow Americans, which I think is what's giving these newsrooms pause when, you know, you wouldn't if it were a fellow American, but it wasn't a bunch of white guys, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. You didn't see this kind of both sides-ism and kind of, well, let's make sure we get the other side kind of crap after 9/11. I mean, I don't remember all the reports of, well, those hijackers were justified in what they did and stuff like, you didn't get that from the news media. Mm-hmm. But when Americans commit a terrorist act, and in my opinion, the attack on the Capitol was a terrorist act, It was a violent attack in order to try to achieve political ends, and which is to be terrorism. But it's not being played that way. I mean, you have the ex-president of the United States promising to pardon the people who attacked our Capitol, who defecated in our Capitol, who stole things from our Capitol, who tried to hunt down Nancy Pelosi, who chanted that they wanted to hang the vice president. The ex-president of the United States said last weekend that if he got reelected, he would pardon those people. I mean, think about this. These are enemies in our midst.
Mm-hmm. You note that as we look at, you know, who is going to uphold democracy, there are reasons to suspect why Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson may not come out on the positive end of that kind of an examination. After all, he was that close to being a mule for fraudulent electoral ballots. Right. You go a step further for everybody that says, well, you know, what have you got against Ron Johnson? I believe the number was 12. Did you come up with 12 things to keep in mind about Ron Johnson?
I would love it if people would just, my Twitter handle is MarkJacob16, M-A-R-K-J-A-C-O-B 16. And a couple of days ago, I had collected various quotes and things that Ron Johnson had done, and I'd listed like 12 reasons why nobody should vote for him. And with evidence, you know, there's attached stories, you know, it goes from him promising that he was only going to run for two terms, and which is, you know, and that helped him get reelected 6 years ago. And now he's broken that promise. Obviously, his attempt to pass on fake electors to Mike Pence, which he said was not a problem because it was only a few seconds that he did it.
Only a few seconds of treason, right?
You know, Pat, that struck me as kind of like, is it like the food rule? If you like drop it on the floor and it's only like 5 seconds, you can pick it up and eat it. It just sounded like that to me. Also to Ron Johnson saying that mouthwash will cure COVID. He said that. He actually said it. If you want to go to my Twitter thread, you will see the story in which he says that. And Listerine had to issue a disclaimer. Listerine had to go public and say, no, that's not true. Because a sitting United States senator was telling people that mouthwash would cure COVID. And then he made fun of vaccines and said, you know, why isn't things invented by God good enough? Well, by that argument, you wouldn't have surgery. You wouldn't have antibiotics. I mean, what is he talking about? There's just so many things like that. And don't get me started on the Russia stuff.
Right. I mean, again, there's so many different avenues, and we'll have time to examine them more over these next 53 days or so. But I'll make this transition off of Ron Johnson by saying that in our conversation yesterday, we said it is completely fair to ask specific questions of him and Tim Michaels and not let them try to nuance things. And in this case, it's about, in light of the repeal of abortion rights, what are your feelings on contraceptives? And you helped point out that Georgia Governor Brian Kemp had recently been caught on tape saying that he is open to the idea of banning contraception. In other words, he's not going to lead on it necessarily, but if the legislature sends him a bill, he will sign it. Again, the example we always use is Scott Walker said in his reelection campaign, oh, right to work. I wouldn't push for that. But he signed the bill as soon as the legislature came to him. So whether it's Brian Kemp in Georgia, Tim Michaels in Wisconsin, Ron Johnson about a national abortion ban, reporters have to do specific follow-ups and get that answer directly to each little thing, because otherwise they will look for a way to wiggle out. They count on reporters and anchors saying, well, we're out of time. We've got to move on.
Right, exactly. And they also have to talk about the flip-flops, because Johnson flip-flops all the time. He's for a national abortion ban. He's against a national abortion ban. He's for guarantees of same-sex marriage. He's against guarantees of same-sex marriage. He's done flip-flops on both of those issues in the last 2 months. It's like he thinks that, I guess he hopes that some set of words will go to some part of the electorate and some set of words will magically just go to the other part of the electorate. But you know, this is really bad. Let's get what you're getting at, which is it's up to the news media to point these things out and to not let politicians slither away from what they've said before and not just continually lie and Ron Johnson has even said that, well, I just said that when he first denied the stuff about him passing on the fake electors to Pence. When he first denied that, he said, well, I was just, you know, passing on. I was just trying to satisfy the news media. You know, it's like, it's almost like he thinks it's a legitimate excuse that he lies to the news media because they asked him the question. Yeah. Not realizing that the news media is how the public finds out what politicians are doing. If you lie to the news media, you're lying to the public.
It's I don't know which is worse, the people that treat all of this as a game or the people that treat all this as just a business plan. To be used. So you have had in the past week You've had President Biden prevent a rail strike or a lockout. You've had Tony Evers prevent a nurses strike. So again, it's just keeping an eye on the ball on actual actions versus words.
Right. And who the grownups are, because yeah. We do have problems. We do have issues. And who are the grownups trying to solve the problems versus the people who are pulling stunts?
Yep. Mark Jacob, we will we'll do this again each week with the headlines. Really appreciate your time. Hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Pat.
All right. Take care. We will be back to wrap up this hour's conversation in just a moment. You're up north. So we spoke the other day with Jesse O'Poyne from the Cap Times about Cap Times Idea Fest, which is going on this weekend. And in the Cap Times this morning is a write-up of one of those first discussions, and it involves medical marijuana or just overall legalization of pot in Wisconsin. It's not here, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. Wisconsin is basically an island surrounded by places that have legalized it to some degree. And, you know, the reason you don't hear it has very little to do with, you know, either anything scientific or even morality. It is simply that we have a legislature that is gerrymandered in place where the farthest right Republicans are going to get elected. And they know, even though it's downright hypocritical, they know that even though you could legalize marijuana, they want to be able to hold on to the farthest right position and not be seen, you know, as weak. Witness Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who is as right wing as it gets, except that he had the gall to acknowledge reality that Joe Biden won the election in Wisconsin, and consequently he was primaried from the far right and barely survived it. That's what we have for a body setting the laws here, and will until more independents and Republicans turn out and say that, you know, Republicans need to take a time out for at least a cycle and, you know, try to be more responsive in areas like legal marijuana. So the discussion for the Cap Times Idea Fest was held yesterday by Democratic State Senator Melissa Agard and Republican Mary Felskowski of Tomahawk. Now, they both are, senators for both. They both were in the Assembly. They both now are in the Senate. And neither said that they expected to ever be a strong advocate for legal pot, but as they have either had personal experiences like Felskowski did with medical marijuana, you know, through her own stage 4 cancer diagnosis, or just through learning more about the topic, they understand that there needs to be some kind of movement here. It is a little unusual, they note, that while doctors can prescribe opioids for pain relief, you can become addicted to that far more easily than, you know, any form of medical marijuana or legal pot or what have you. And so Felskowski, again, a hardcore Republican, noted that that made absolutely zero sense, that opioids that you can get addicted to are pretty much your only option. And so, you know, she knows that these are not necessarily the bills that she thought she was going to be working on when she got to the legislature, but she recognizes now that this is what we have to do. This is, as Melissa Agar said, this is not a new conversation. This is not a new drug, as Huey Lewis would sing. This is something we know has been there. It has been studied. We know the ups and downs, and that it makes more sense to have this tool in the healthcare toolkit than it does to just have things that you could get addicted to. This is not to say that that fully legalized recreational marijuana doesn't have its potential downsides. I know in Colorado, they were still studying the effect of buzz driving and you know, the degree to which that is an issue as much as drunk driving, I think is still being reviewed. So I'm not going to tell you that, you know, fully legalized marijuana has no downside. That's not the case at all. But to not even have it there as an option from a medical standpoint is something where Wisconsin is increasingly isolated. And frankly, if it were up to me as a former member of the legislature, I would, in fact, go with, you know, full legalization and then, you know, regulate it, tax it and everything else. Because, and again, you know, I say this being close to people who are in that position, use or does it not? We're not talking cancer patients anymore. We're talking, you know, I've got a hangnail. Can I please have some medical marijuana? Why? What are we even talking about? Just, you know, let it not be that restrictive, but let's have proper regulations that work. And it's not like we're, again, reinventing the wheel. We're one of the last states to go about doing this. We now have the luxury of being able to look at every other state that has gone down this path, learn from their experiences, and craft the bill and the laws that we think would work best here in Wisconsin. This is kind of your quintessential no-brainer if you're a Republican in anything that's not a far-right district where you can show some leadership. You can say this is, you know, an issue that you know goes beyond partisan labels, and that this is something that, you know, we need to get done for the people of our state. And if that's where Mary Fialkowski eventually goes, then, you know, good for her. But and she's doing this from a basically a far right district. I mean, that's a damn tough district for a Democrat to win, you know, in northern Wisconsin. But there need to be more. There just like there need to be more people who, like Robin Voss, acknowledge that the 2020 election is over and done with and decided fairly and let's move on. We need to stop talking about whether or not to legalize cannabis and move on. And that's it. Brewers were off yesterday, and now they are about to start I need a better word, not crucial, not urgent. They need, let's just drop the adjectives. They need that. They're starting a series. There you go. A series against the Yankees and the Mets.
I was just saying they got a series against both New York teams, and they're pretty crucial though. I'm going to agree with you on this one.
They are, if the Brewers have any hope of staying in the wild card chase, you know, and again, the division race is done unless now the Cardinals have to be their own worst enemy. And they're certainly not showing any signs of that. So, yeah, you're looking at you know, the Padres, where I think we are a game and a half out and we don't own the tiebreaker. So, you know, we've got to do better than that even to take that wild card spot. But again, let's remember this is a team that got off to the best 50-game start in franchise history. The tools are there. The players are there. Yeah, Josh Hader's gone. And yes, there are pitchers who are injured right now. But we've had that all season where people have been injured and you've had to rotate people in and out. So this is something that is still attainable, the postseason, that is. And yes, there will be very hard conversations, I think, after this about, look, you traded Josh Hader. What's your plan from here? You know, for the front office. But right now, this is the core that we've got. Let's develop them and let's go win this thing already. We're going to have a rainy weekend across much of Wisconsin, not a total washout all the way through. Temps above normal for another, you know, 4 or 5 days. So make the most of it. We will have Christina Laurie coming up from Up North News and Carolyn Fiddler, Courier Newsroom Editorial Director, all in a moment. You're Up North.